Our first case this morning is case number 57203, Building Energetics Corporation versus EHE LP. Mr. Simmons for the appellants and Mr. Raybeck for the respondent.
I'd like to confirm before you got underway that each of you received my disclosure.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, and both of you, my participation is acceptable. Thank you.
And no no reply brief was filed, so no rebuttal. Yes, please. Is it Simons or Simmons?
Simons.
Simons. Mr. Simons, go ahead.
Thank you. Initially, I'd like to say it's an honor and privilege for me to be here before you today. And thank you for working diligently to establish Nevada law for us to follow. Now, going into the facts of this case, on simple blush, it looks like it should be easily addressed. However, what we're dealing with in this case is an overlay of three different statutory enactments. We have Chapter 107, which is the trustee's obligation under deed of trust. We have Chapter 361, which is the trust deed and the effect of what the delinquent taxes have on the rights and obligations of parties. And the overlay is Chapter 40, which is the deficiency statutes. After extensive research, I have not found any other case in the United States that deals with these three types of statutory enactments as they interplay. We have a bit here, but nothing that is on point. So my argument is going to focus on the relationship of the trustee's deed that was issued and the effect of that trustee's deed on June 2009 and the subsequent file trustee's deed, which was filed a few months later. So my argument is going to focus on that interplay and then what transpired after that. Going to the background.
Before you leap into that point, I'd like to take you back one more step, if I may. And that is the question whether the cry of the trustee's sale constitutes the transfer. Does the trustee's foreclosure require recordation of the deed for it to be completed, or is the foreclosure completed when the sale is cried?
That point, as you may know, was addressed by the bankruptcy court in the context of, did a debtor have a right to property when as there was a subsequently filed bankruptcy before the deed was recorded, and whether that impaired the deed of trust and whether it had validity. That court said, based upon a review of the foreclosure statutes, it's the effect of the transfer as between the parties, being the beneficiaries and the owner of the property, was effective upon the sale price, the payment of the bid. That the recordation was a ministerial act. But that was with respect to only those two parties. And the court dealt with a little bit between perfection and the consummation of the transaction.
And what's the bankruptcy case you're alluding to?
I don't have the site. It's in the court order. There's a citation. I could grab it for you.
Don't disrupt your argument. I'll find it.
Okay. It's in the case. It's in the district court's decision. That case I don't believe is on point because it was in a specific context of the debtor-creditor relationship, as well as it didn't have the overlay of a subsequently recorded trustee's treasurer's deed that could impact ownership. And the reason I'm bringing that up is...
But you're saying the court's decision didn't reach the issue of third parties, like in this case, Lyon County.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So your position would be, although I haven't seen any cases on this in Nevada, there might be one back in Ray Smith for Nevada, but I'm not sure that case governs these situations when the Chapter 107 didn't exist at that time. But the question is whether or not the effect of the trustee's sale operates from the point of the cry of the sale or the recordation of the deed as against third parties. In your opinion, it would only operate from the recordation of the deed.
Absolutely.
Right, but for the case you're alluding to is In Re Grant. It's on page 6. The judge cites
correct
from that case on page 6. And that case pretty clearly says when the gavel falls or the cry is made, however you want to express this, the sale is a fait accompli at that point. And the recordation of the deed is ministerial. Would you agree with that?
I would agree that's what the case says.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. And why would that be in error, or why does that not have significance here?
Because the facts of this case go a little bit beyond that situation. And the facts of this case, there is a treasurer's deed that is issued. The treasurer's deed transfers title and ownership. As Casaza says, that upon the expiration of the two-year period, regardless of what has transpired before, title, unless the property has been redeemed, title automatically vests in the county. The county then becomes the owner. My argument will focus on the owner versus status of the beneficiary for the reconveyance that subsequently occurred.
So your point is the June 2009 treasurer's deed pretermits the October 2009 recordation of the trustee's deed?
I didn't catch that.
June 2009, the treasurer's deed is executed,
correct?
Correct. And then in the property, the trustee's deed is recorded in October, and then in March of the following year, the foreclosing party redeems the property.
They obtain it via reconveyance.
Reconveyance.
I believe is a difference between a redemption right. and reconveyance.
Okay, so why does not title vest in them at that point?
At the point of the original trustees, action of holding the sale in 08?
Yes. I mean, they get title at that point, and then there's this tax lien on it. They go forward, they redeem the property or secure its reconveyance using the vernacular of 361. Why are they not simply allowed to do that? They've got a tax lien on the property. They have to clear it.
If I may walk you through the steps of my argument,
please
I think
do.
This
Sorry.
Will answer that question. The during the pendency of the trustees, reported trustees sale in 08, the property was held by the Lyon County under the tax certificate, which is under 361.450, a superior lien. It has priority over every lien. Then upon the expiration of the two-year period, when that two-year period expired, title and ownership automatically vested in the county. That means that if you're going to obtain title to the property after that date, you have to do it pursuant to 361.585 subsection 4 in one of the capacities. One of the capacities as owner or as beneficiary under deeds of trust. So,
or a successor to either.
A successor. And it, what exactly does successor mean? In the case that was cited by defendants, the Sirion case, it talks about successor being an heir, a devisee, or a purchaser. We don't have any cases in the law of Nevada, at least that I could locate, that says exactly what successor means. So I don't think the beneficiaries, when they, now stepping back over here during the period of time with the when the trustee sale occurred, that affected the relationship by and between the owner of the property and the beneficiaries. But that transfer did not effectuate a transfer of ownership under the law until the, assuming there was not a trustee's, the treasurer's deed issue, the recordation would have made it clear on the record and of record that the beneficiaries were now the owner. What my argument is, that deed, when it was recorded, post-treasurer's deed, cannot establish ownership. The reason is, the treasurer's deed, pursuant to statute and the law, vested ownership in the county. So the county now has ownership of the property, subject to a right of reconveyance. That reconveyance, because the beneficiaries could not be legal owner because that ownership is held by Lyon County. They had to obtain reconveyance in a different capacity. And my argument is they obtained reconveyance in their capacities as beneficiaries under the deed of trust.
Where in the statutes do you find support for your argument that the county becomes the owner at the point?
Oh, the statutes are very clear on that, and it's 361.585.
Yeah, I have it here.
Subsection 1. It says when there's no redemption has been made, that there will be a deed issued to the county. The Casaza case, sorry, I have it right here, deals with this point and says if the property is not redeemed, title to the property vests in the county immediately on the expiration of the two-year redemption period and cites 361.570. So based upon the statutory enactment and the Casaza case, upon the expiration of the two-year term, vesting of title to the underlying property, to the fee, goes to the county. The county is the owner. Would you like me to move on?
Yeah.
Okay. So when the beneficiaries found out or discovered that they did not have the ownership to the property, they petitioned to Lyon County to obtain a deed transferring ownership back to them via reconveyance. And the Casaza case also makes a distinction between conveyance and what reconveyance means. Reconveyance is transferring the property back to whoever is petitioning. My argument is the status of the beneficiaries in obtaining the reconveyance was as beneficiaries under the deed of trust, not as an owner or successor owner, because they could not be an owner because the ownership was held by Lyon County. Now, following that logic, if they're the beneficiaries, then there could not have been a prior valid trustee sale. That's the heart of the argument I'm presenting today.
And the linchpin of that argument turns on how the court addresses the effective date of the issue I raised earlier.
Correct.
Because if the court were to agree with Grant and say that's effective against third parties, mm-hmm. then the recordation of the trustee's deed doesn't help your argument or make
Correct.
Any difference in it. They were owner. And as owner, they could redeem, and they could also reconvey later.
Yes, absolutely.
But your point is they could not become owner because the property was held in ownership by the county in 2008 when the foreclosure sale occurred.
Well, in 2008, the county was not technically the owner because the statute says they hold the property. But no case law in the statute does not say what does holding the property mean. There's other cases that
they didn't become the owner till the two-year period expired.
Exactly. They can't because they're holding subject to the redemption. But if the redemption doesn't occur, that status changes to automatically vested as owner of the property, subject to a right of reconveyance.
Is it your argument then, Mr. Simons, that because subsection 4B specifically references beneficiary of a note and deed of trust, that necessarily defines what is meant or not meant by the term successor in subparagraph H? That successor does not, therefore, include a beneficiary since it's specifically been referenced earlier?
I think based upon statutory interpretation, it would not include because it's already been carved out separately and given its own line item. So you fall in these categories. And citing back to ownership, there is no definition saying that a successor owner is via a foreclosure sale. I can't find any cases that would say that, which would affect my argument. But we do have the case cited by the defendants is that it's heir, devisee, or purchaser, which makes sense, given that the beneficiary of the deed of trust is carved out as a separate distinction from that of an ownership capacity.
If you take that approach, though, the problem with it is that, other than the recording issues that we've been talking about, if you take that approach, then the beneficiary of a deed of trust who forecloses could never qualify to get the property back by reconveyance under the statute.
I'm not making that argument. Because
no, but I mean that's the consequence of what you're advocating.
I think there's a
this statute would seem to preclude in the future, and we got lots of foreclosures all over this state, and probably a lot of foreclosures in this state on properties in which taxes have not been paid.
Mm-hmm.
So this has great significance because you could end up with a number of circumstances in which beneficiaries of deeds of trust are not in a position under this interpretation who foreclose to come back and redeem. And some of these foreclosures have probably taken much longer than the 2 or 3 year period that depending on how quickly the county acted to pursue the collection of its taxes, has occurred.
Can I identify two issues raised by your question?
The presiding judge will have to give you time.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, thank you. First off, I think there's a distinction between if there was a recordation of the beneficiary's deed of trust pre-transfer, a trustee's deed, versus post-transfer.
Because at that point,
you're saying if they had recorded the deed in October when they conducted the foreclosure sale?
I lose.
You lose. So your whole argument hinges on the late recordation of the deed.
It is. Because if...
Well, because they become the category of an owner at that point.
Exactly.
I see.
Now, the second point you raised on the timing issue is during the period of time that transpired here, the legislature amended 107.080, requiring the trustees under subsection 8 to record within 30 days, or the new property purchaser to record within 10, 20 days after receiving the deed of trust, the trustee's deed. Under either scenario, has to be recorded within 30 days. So we're not going to have this year-long gap between a foreclosure sale and a recordation.
When was that amendment, though? Wasn't that just this past session?
No, it came into effect in 2009.
Oh, okay.
And it was July 1st, 2009, which kind of smacked right in the middle of the timing here. And I don't bring it up in part of my argument because I don't think it affects, I don't think it applies to any of the timing issues we're dealing with.
But doesn't that implicit, well, I guess it doesn't. The idea that it must be recorded in 30 days, doesn't that sort of express a legislative judgment that it's valid at the time of the gavel falling, or however you want to express the...
My argument is taking the step. I'm not arguing that there is not an effect of the contractual right of the trustees, the beneficiaries, to pursue. I think if that transpires, then they can divest the owner at that time of the interest. However, that is as between those two parties.
I understand that point.
As to the third, what I'm saying is the recordation. By the time they get around to recording, to saying to the entire world, hey, we're now the owners, it's too late. The trustee's deed is already in effect, saying we are the owners. Now, you don't get to come back and take our ownership via pre-transfer conduct. What you get is the right to seek reconveyance under the statute, which is a retransfer of the fee simple to one of these categories of groups that can come in and request it. Because ownership didn't become established via the recordation of the deed pre-treasurer's deed recordation, the argument falls that they're beneficiary in this situation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
For the respondent.
Good morning, Justices. My name is Jeff Raubeck. I'm counsel for the respondents in this case and was counsel for the respondents in the trial court case. Kind of focusing on what appears the argument in this case is that, or what you're interested in, is that I believe at the time the foreclosure sale occurred in October of 2008, when the gavel fell, that's when title And that's what the bankruptcy court previously ruled in this case, that is cited in the trial judge's decision and also referenced in our briefs. And that stands the reason. And if you look at 107.080, all it does is talk about basically that the sale, when the sale occurs, the bidder becomes the owner of the property. Although there has been an amendment that did become effective July 1, 2009, that put a time limit on when the bidder to record the trustee's deed. The only penalty is if he doesn't do it, if there's someone who suffers damages because of that, they can pursue the bidder for damages. But it doesn't change the fact that the title occurs at the time of the foreclosure sale when the amount is bid.
I can appreciate that analysis as between the lender and owner. Why would that hold true, Mr. Rawback, as against third parties? The whole function of the Recording Act statutes in our state is to put third parties on notice. And while you're noodling about that question, I'll ask you another one. Does it make a difference when the third party is the county? Most deeds of trust are subordinate to the lien, statutory lien, even if unpaid, in favor of a county. So the county would have a lien against this property for unpaid taxes by statute. So if you could look at both of those questions.
I think it might be different if we're talking about a non-governmental entity who is the third party as compared to a governmental entity, because what I think the trial court said here, and my argument is that when my clients became the owner of the property at the foreclosure sale in October of 2008, they went into the shoes of the appellants in this case, and whatever interest they owned in that land subject to the tax certificate, my clients acquired. Okay, so subsequent to there too, when the treasurer's deed was issued to Lyon County, there's still a time period for people to redeem the property, and it sets forth the category of people who can redeem the property. I believe what the trial court said, and my argument is that my clients redeemed the property as owner of the property, not as a beneficiary of a deed of trust.
Virtue of the effective date of the sale.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so when they were the owners of they became the owners of whatever ownership interest there was in the appellants at the time of the foreclosure sale, and as that owner.
Well, that's why I assume they cited Grant. That's why I assume the judge cited Grant.
Yes.
But it comes back to the question I've asked earlier. Would that be effective against third parties if Lyon County is viewed in that capacity? But alternatively, would it be viewed against Lyon County, which has a statutory lien that is superior to your client's deed of trust?
Well, the Lyon County, the deed Lyon County gets is still subject to redemption or reconveyance even after that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so my clients fit into one of those categories, and I believe it's the category owner that they were able to come in and redeem the property as. And if they were the owner, then everything the trial court did is appropriate. Now, I did cite in my brief there is an older California appellate court case that pretty much says that fits all the scenario here, other than we don't have a tax sale involved. But it does say that the governmental entity doesn't have complete legal title when they issue the tax certificate, that the underlying owner still has an interest that can be foreclosed upon. And that's what happened here. The underlying interest was foreclosed upon, and my clients became the owner of that interest. So the fact that the trustee's deed did not get recorded until a later date, I don't think really has a great significance in this case, because they are the owner as of the date of the sale. Lyon County recognized them as the owner, and they redeemed the property.
What if they're not the owner? Do you think successor under subparagraph H includes your client?
I don't know. I think they're either the owner,
or they're out of luck.
Well, or they're at that point. If they're not the owner, they're still a beneficiary of the deed, a beneficiary in a deed of trust.
But that would invalidate the foreclosure sale and the deficiency suit, correct?
I think if they
so you have to qualify under owner. You can't get there any other way.
No, right. I they were the owner, and that's how we got to where we are. But I don't think they're a successor in interest under that redemption statute.
At least not for purposes of this proceeding. If you were arguing with the county, you might take a different perspective, correct?
Yes. So, in conclusion, I believe my clients became the owner of the property by reason of the foreclosure sale. The fact the deed was not recorded until after the treasurer's deed was recorded, I don't think changes that fact, and they redeemed the property as owner, and therefore I think the trial court's decision was correct in this case.
Thank you.
Could you comment? I have a question on...
He's got plenty of time left. So.
We're arguing these concepts, and I want to go back to the public policy that I'm struggling to understand what public policy would be served by crediting your opponent's argument. And I realize I'm asking you to play devil's advocate, but could you comment on the public policies implicated if we were to accept his construction of these statutes and why that's not a good idea?
I think it's not a good idea because that I think it basically destroys the statutory structure that this state allows deficiency judgments under certain circumstances. So if the property owner doesn't want to face a deficiency judgment, or the guarantor behind that doesn't want to face a deficiency judgment, they just stop paying taxes and let the property go that way. And if you stop and then if the beneficiary of the deed of trust comes through and acquires the property in the fashion that Mr. Simons has advocated, there's no it just defeats the deficiency judgment statutes.
What about the argument that foreclosing parties should be required to dot every I and cross every T and follow the statutes to the letter to pursue a non-judicial foreclosure followed by a deficiency judgment?
I think they're supposed to, and I think they have to, and I think that occurred here in this case.
Okay.
I mean, there was no requirement at the time that the trustee's deed had to be recorded within a certain period of time. That only became in effect in July 1, 2009. And I still don't think that negates when the sale occurs or when title transfers. All that does is helps the county collect their transfer tax, and they have a new person to go after for real property taxes.
So not at the time before they put the 30-day period in, the only risk by not timely recording or not immediately recording the deed following the trustee's sale is that a third party who buys without notice could have a superior right.
Yes.
Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Justice Cherry, just a no question, but a point of personal privilege,
sure.
If I may. 5 of my 7 years on the Supreme Court, I've been on the Southern panel, so I haven't had the benefit of hearing argument by a number of Northern Nevada lawyers. I know both Mr. Robeck, Mr. Simons, and it's a privilege to hear them argue today. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And I've been fortunate to be on the Northern panel since 2008. So.
And I've been lucky. I'm 2-2. So.
Maybe someday I'll go back to the South. But for now, I enjoy living up here in Carson and being on the Northern panel. This matter will stand submitted. Thank you very much, both of you.